This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 461, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Hey everybody, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 461. My name's Paul Montgomery. Joining me, Mr. Connor Kilpatrick.
What's up?
And Joshua Flanagan.
People are going to be like, ugh, there's too many people on the show these days.
It's crowded.
I don't know what to do. I
feel like a third wheel. We are iFanboy, we like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book that they read. We call that the Pick of the Week. Talk about it on this year's podcast, along with other books of the week, various other topics of interest, and other goofy nonsense. We know you like the goofy nonsense. We like to get that in there when we can. Before we get to the show, quick reminder / warning. This is a review show, so we are going to be talking about the things that happened in this week's books. So if you're worried about spoilers, pause the show, come back. We'll be waiting for you. This week, Josh had the pick.
I did. I will tell you that I was leaning towards something other than Rocket Raccoon number 5. Mm-hmm. And then I started to read this sort of near the end of my stack. And basically, just for those of you who didn't read it or don't know, for whatever reason, Rocket and Groot are around a campfire with some aliens, and they're starting to tell a story. No reason, and I don't need a reason. I'm happy that there's no reason.
Yeah, no, it's a one-shot. It's
and
great.
And Groot's like, Groot says, I'm Groot. And Rocket's like, I'm not telling that story. And Groot's like, I'm Groot. And Rocket's like, all right, fine, then you tell it. So then, now, if this had just been a couple of pages and a gag, I would not have made this the pick of the week. But then we are then treated to the rest of the story, this narration of a story as told by Groot, featuring no other words other than I am Groot. And it's a stunt and it's a gimmick, but it was also a really fun use of in-character stuff playing with the form of comics and
it was basically a silent issue.
Yeah, exactly. It was a silent issue, but with that sort of added gag of the I am Groot thing,
right. Which made it funny.
Yeah, so throughout the story, all the characters have their word balloons just as if they normally were, but the only thing anybody says is I am Groot. It's illustrated by, you know, the sequential art doing in this instance exactly what sequential art is supposed to do, is tell the story. And I've heard from lots of artists that the real test of whether your art is any good is if you can do it without the words. And this is basically what this is doing. And I really like that sort of formal experiment. And this was really fun. And then, you know, at the same time, because they had I am Groot, the letterer got to play around with it too.
Well, punctuation. The letterer really, which, who is it? Let me scroll back. It's, Jeff Eckleberry.
Yeah.
Is as responsible for telling the story as the artist is.
Absolutely.
You know, making the text bigger or smaller or putting it in italics. It, you know, it's as, or the making the word balloon small. Like there's a little, you can, you know, there's a point where Rocket whispers, "I am Groot," to Groot, and yeah. you can tell it's a conspiratorial thing going on, and it's nice. It's funny about this is that when I swiped over in the first page, I saw that Scotty Young wasn't drawing all of the issues. Right. Jake Parker and Scotty Young.
He does the campfire stuff at the beginning and the end, and then right. Jake Parker in the middle.
So I immediately thought, okay, well, this is going to be my last issue then. and then I ended up loving this one. So
yeah, totally. I mean, you can tell when you're looking at it who does what, but it's totally in the same tone.
Sure.
And it works. And honestly, you know, obviously Scott is a great artist and he's got his own thing, but it doesn't really lose anything for that. I would subtract no points because Scotty didn't draw the whole thing, basically.
No, this art's really good.
And it's seamless. I mean, you can tell, but only if you're looking for it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like Rocket has like a bit heftier of a snout from Jake Parker, but that's
I don't know.
I think
they're both cartoony, but their styles are completely different.
Yeah. But
I can tell right away. Yeah. The way they draw Rocket completely different.
Well, I think the colored like ties it in and everything. So that's
Either way, for the purposes of this thing, like I'm not going to let that bother. Oh, fill in.
No,
artists,
no, the
whatever.
Art was
like,
fine. It was good.
It was great. So, you know, completely honest, this is my pick for this was it was really fun, but B, it was like a formal experiment, and I really like that kind of thing. And you know, you just get to see the work as it exists, and you can't do any gags. You can't pull things along with the dialogue to cover up for anything else. You're just telling the thing, and it was really fun to see the different ways that they communicated without having the words to communicate with through the whole thing. Actually, you specifically mentioned that whisper. The lettering is one way to do it, which is cool. But I, you know, like the acting of the characters worked really well. Like you could tell he put his hand up and is, you know, sort of going sideways. And that is, we're going to talk. There's a question about this sort of later in the show. But that's a great example of craft. Like, how are you communicating? How are you making panels sequentially work one after another? To say something.
I wonder if you actually read that email, because that's not what the email's about at all.
Well, no, not that, but the idea of craft.
Well, we've talked about how there's sort of this Looney Tunes sensibility to what Scotty's been doing with the book, and here it's like the purest form of that because it's like a Roadrunner cartoon or like a Tom and Jerry. So you actually have to do everything visually, and even you know Wile E. Coyote had signs and stuff and. The written word in there that this doesn't even benefit from that. So the thing I really liked about where the issue really won me over was just the level of commitment to the joke. So that they actually are going through this thoroughfare and you see these buildings and billboards and those say, "I am Groot."
Yep. All the lettering, there was nothing, no words could be used of any kind. And then, you know, at the end, like it's super cutesy. It's because it's a surprise party. So they go on this quest, and it just turns out that Rocket doesn't get any money out of it. It's just his friends throwing him a surprise party, which is
sweet. Not happy.
He's not. He's actually quite anguished by it. He's got a little thundercloud over his head.
And then you know he had the little sweet ending where no one understood what the hell Groot was saying around the campfire except for the one little leaf kid.
The leaf kid. Always. So no one likes him.
It's this great button at the end because how do you end that running joke and you have to come up with another joke, and I really got a laugh out of that. I thought that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's also showing I think it's a lot to Scotty Young as a writer too. I
mean, absolutely.
I may have been disappointed he didn't draw the whole thing, but I think as a writer he's really coming along very quickly.
Yeah, and don't think, I don't know those of you out there in comic book land, don't think because there was no words in it, there was nothing to write. I mean, he's doing this in full script, and that's a challenge. And he doesn't have the words to go back on. So every single thing has to be described and laid out and plotted. And it was just good. I mean, in the end, it's there's not a ton to say about it because it's really easy to know what was impressive about it and what was fun.
I think this was my my favorite issue so far, or at least my favorite issue since the prison breakout.
Yeah.
Which also had a similarly, you know, fun take on like, you know, it's the cross section of the prison and breaking out and stuff. This is fun.
I'm Groot.
They get to play more with the things they do here. You get to be goofier in a Rocket Raccoon and Groot team up book, basically.
Yeah. And it's more, I don't want to say it's not all ages, but I just feel like their audience is a little bit broader, possibly.
Well, what about it? Do you think it's not all ages?
Well, there was I think the first couple were a little more violent and sort of adult themed with some of Rocket's paramours, but that's specious. So.
Yeah, I don't know.
This issue is totally all ages. Yeah. Nothing wrong with it at all.
And there's the siren sort of mermaids, but I don't think that was all that bawdy, really.
Nope.
Yeah. I mean, there was the full frontal.
Well, yeah. Yeah, Rocket Dong.
Yeah. I mean, didn't expect that. I thought this was really good, and I was not surprised to see it as the pick. I don't have any problems with this issue. It was really, really fun.
Yeah, end of the day, I was just like, you know, that was the one that this week I was like, all right, well, that was something really cool and different from everything else that I read, and it was well executed, so it was, mm-hmm. it was an easy one.
And also, it was, as we said earlier, the longer the joke went on, it was like, okay, they're really just
totally. When I, it was
going
it was,
for it.
It was solidified when they went for the commitment. I was like, oh, this is the whole issue. Rad. Like, I was totally fine with that. Because, you could have done the gag in two pages.
Like five or six. Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't. They totally went for it, and I respect that.
Good work.
That made me happy.
Good work.
Did you folks read the new Kurt Busiek book?
Yes, I did.
No.
I did.
Oh.
I've been very excited about this one. I'm curious that you didn't read it, Connor.
I've never even heard of it.
Oh, okay.
Tooth and Claw number one from Kurt Busiek. Dewey. What's the name of the other name of the artist? It is Benjamin Dewey and Jordi Belair and Comic Craft, obviously.
Who's the publisher?
Image. It's Image. Image number one. Whereas Rocket Raccoon was very not wordy, this one had a whole lot of splaining to do and a whole lot of world building to establish, which was done fairly well, little top heavy in the beginning, but once it was sorted out and then the rug yanked out from under you at the end, I saw the point of it all.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. Once it gets going, like, oh, this is a really interesting world. And so these are anthropomorphic animals. You've got a wild boar sort of shaman on the cover. And our protagonist is a bull terrier. It's like Spud McKenzie. So we got a bull terrier who is the son of a bull terrier mage, a wizard. And so we're living in this future society, I guess. And they live in floating cities that are powered by magic. Everything is magic. They entirely depend upon magic for their whole culture and civilization to work. And
there's a whole hierarchy, substratas of society. Some animals are different than others, and they're all, there's birds and lizards and buffalo.
And it's a little like Black Sad in that who, like, what kind of animal, like, sort of informs what kind of
personality
they have. So, like, the leader, like, the law is an eagle. Mm-hmm. And whatever the eagle says goes. But then you've got boars, there's a giraffe. And it was kind of funny seeing them try to squeeze the giraffe into panels. Kind of slouches a bit. But this was a lot of world in here. There's a lot.
It's a ton. I think it's a longer than this. This has got to be longer than a regular issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is extra pages. Like at first I was a little like, oh, come on, get on with it. But by the end I was all in. And also, like, you know, Busiek gets a pass from me. Like, I'm like, all right, we're going to stick with this, you know? In the way that a lot of people, like, I'm not comparing it to this content-wise or thematically, but, like, a lot of people say that if you just watch the first episode of The Wire and you don't know what it is at the end, you're like, what the hell was that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a ton of stuff. And, like, the thing is, you need four episodes before you're like, oh, and then you're all in. This was about 40 pages before I think you get there.
There's there's an English fantasy novel that came out a while ago called Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
I love that book.
It's a great book, and that book opens with them, with the Society of Magicians, arguing about what should we do about magic, and they're sort of academics, and they're arguing whether we should actually use magic or whether we should just talk about it and write papers about it. And how stuffy it is, so I totally got that vibe from this. And it's all arguments about magic is running out. So should we, like, ration magic? What should we do? How are we going to get through this? And there's this one shaman basically who says we need to open up this portal and bring back basically the Messiah who gave them magic in the first place. And it looks like it's a human being from the flashback that we see. So in trying to bring back that human being to help them restore magic to the world and, you know, save society, I can't say humanity because they're not, you know, save the animal kingdom. It brings about this huge cataclysm and things go sour really fast.
And hardcore.
Hardcore. There isn't what's that stuff we're afraid of? The wrought iron stuff? I don't wanna
they're not a reboristic society.
But there's some people get impaled and
there are iron works.
And it's all the more harrowing if you're an animal person. Like, oh, the poor owl.
It's true. It's true. And then to cap it off, like the last page in this, and like literally it's on the inside of the cover. They used everything they had. The last page of this is this dialogue between cartoon avatars.
It's made to look like iChat.
Yeah, of Busick like talking, reaching out to the artist and getting him. He's like, hey, I write Astro City and I wrote Marvels and Avengers. I have this thing that you want to, I'm in. And they're like, oh, okay, well. And he tries to convince him and the guy's like, I'm in. And then he talks to Jordy and she's like, sure. And then they talk to the letter. Like, it's just.
And each of those has a little avatar that's like an animal. So Busick is a bear and Jordy is a fox. And Ben Dewey's a lion, I think.
That's nice of him. They all have glasses.
Yeah.
It was good. It'll be a fun thing. It's definitely pretty esoteric. So it'll be interesting to see how it does out in the world. But you know, it's Kurt Busick, and it's him doing what he wants to. Clearly, like, this is his thing, and it's well produced. So good first issue.
Good stuff.
When Birthright number one came out, also from Image, we got a lot of people on Twitter and on the website saying, "Why didn't you talk about it? Why wasn't it the pick of the week?" And I hadn't read it.
I had, but I think I was off that week. This is a Josh Williamson book.
Birthright number two is out this week.
Birthright number two is out. And because of that, I made sure I wanted to talk. But also I wanted to anyway. Artist Andre Bresson. It's a really good premise. Josh usually does – all of his other stuff is kind of horror. There's Ghosted and then there's is it Nailbiter?
Nailbiter.
Yeah, see – I don't like horror books. I know I like Josh. He's a good writer, but
even if you like horror books, Nailbiter is pretty grisly.
Exactly. Well, no. The title alone was like, oh, people who like that are going to like that, but I'm not going because I don't want nothing for nails. Nails are right up there with rebar. but this is a totally different direction.
It's like fantasy.
So I'm going to go ahead and blow the first issue because we're talking about the second one. Yeah. So in the first issue, kid and his dad and the brother are out playing in the park and the kid goes behind
a bush. They're playing fetch.
Yeah. Kid goes behind a bush and disappears. The family is wrecked. They're all arguing with each other. We shoot forward a few months or something like that, maybe a couple of years. And the police call and they're like, this guy, and there's like a big bearded barbarian guy. This guy just showed up and he says he's your son. The premise being that he went to a world and became Conan and was their savior and saved everything and then returned. And then the twist bit is that he actually didn't succeed in that world and now he's being controlled by their evil overseer and he's fooling everybody.
He claims he's back to save this world from whatever is in the other dimension, was called Lord of the Rings world.
Yeah.
And in actuality, he lost to Sauron and Sauron now controls him and has sent him to Earth to conquer Earth. And so the second issue...
Yeah.
The family, we meet him at the very end of the first issue. We find out the twist. In the second issue, the family confronts this guy.
You go to the police station. And that's my favorite scene in this issue is where there's like, well, this is what he was armed. Here's the stuff we found on him. And they go into this room and there's this long table and it's axes and hatchets and swords. Like
a great deal of weaponry.
It's kind of like when you're playing one of those games and you've got that inventory that's just endless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like in real life, like I don't know how he possibly.
Like, how could he possibly carry that around? And
so, what's interesting?
Mary Poppins satchel.
Yes.
What's interesting about this is the various conversations that are going on. So, there's the conversations between the parents and the police that are like, "This doesn't make any sense. This is weird." And then the brothers, after they talk, and you know, he's trying to convince
the parents are divorced in the meantime.
Yeah, and then
it sounds like the mother's with the cop now.
Yeah, she doesn't want to believe it, and she holds the father responsible.
The brother has had a hard life since his brother. I mean, everyone's life's been shattered by the disappearance. Now they're dealing with this Conan dude.
And then inside his head while they're having this conversation is his you know, talking to the Dark Lord back and forth. So there's a lot of moving pieces. So
we're filling in the gaps, dramatic. What his experience was like as a kid and growing up in that world. I love the concept of this, and I love the execution. I missed the first issue, and I even get people were commenting over on panels and saying like, "Oh, you got to check out this book." I'm like, "Okay, I'll have to catch up." And people were right; this is really good. Yep. We totally missed out.
Really strong.
Yeah.
If you missed that, around two issues are out.
And it's beautiful. You're gonna like it's this. Really pretty.
Great art. It helps the story is great too, but the art's also really wonderful, and it fits that sort of sword and sandals Conan style really well.
Yeah,
it's fun.
They're all
it's
in.
Really fun.
Like when he does his barbarian stuff, like there's no, it's full on. You know, like big E-Man
folks. Like this Brisson guy should do like D&D manuals or like the monster guides, whatever.
Yeah.
Because he's really good with, you know, all the different kind of, you know, monsters and stuff, and the, you know, the cloaks and capes and all the weapons. I mean, when you see that table full of weapons and
basically there is enough Frazetta.
Yeah.
There's the appropriate amount
of Frazetta.
Frazetta
quotient is high.
Yes. Which is exactly
really good.
The ingredient that you need. Now, Detective Comics number 35 was our pick of the week last time.
Yes.
We were very happy and surprised with the John Paul Leon art, and also, is it Ben Percy?
Ben Percy is the
Ben Percy.
Writer,
his debut is novel writer. His debut. What did you think of the closing chapter?
I think just as beautiful. I think they needed more than two issues.
Yeah.
I agree.
Because it's sort of rushed to the end with Batman confronting this eco terrorist.
There were a lot of issues swirling around with the aging people and the sort of larger concept of everything that was happening.
Yeah, I liked that stuff.
Yeah,
It was very compressed. I didn't get the fact that they were aging, although once I did, I thought that was really fun. That
I didn't remember that from
before. That Batman and the cop were aging because of the. Are we supposed to believe that Dick Grayson is torturing somebody?
I also had that thought, and that
was
actually,
like, huh.
Really bothered me.
There's that.
I know
and
he's
also
off doing his Grayson stuff in that book that never comes out, but. Like,
and also the confrontation in the club, it was kind of icky. I don't know, weird. With
Well, that was a little more Dick Grayson style, to be honest.
Yeah, but
literally, like the tooth removal, I thought, the hell is going on in that Grayson book?
Yeah. No, the club thing was totally in character. It's the battery torture is not in character.
What I've read of the Grayson book, where he is, you know, a James Bond type or whatever. It's a little more complex than that. It's a little bit more happy-go-lucky.
A little less battery torture.
They also made it's funny because like the I don't plan to have many criticisms of Leon, but he made him look quite old.
Yeah.
And then the dialogue had it made it seem like he was quite young, and so I didn't know what it was.
On the phone, doesn't he? Looks like he's in his late 40s.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm sort of looking at this. This two-issue story, anyway, is sort of like an Elseworlds tale.
Yes.
It doesn't really fit into the Batman world, and he looks like the old Batman. And he's not even drawing the dumb costume.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, I didn't really care because I just sort of look at it as sort of a, you know, offbeat, sort of darker Batman story.
Yeah, and that sort of helped me get through like the Grayson pulling teeth thing. Like he's okay. It's a darker version of all this.
Yeah,
like, the thing is, that being the case, so it should have just been somebody else. Like he knows some guy. Should have been, I'm just, like a man.
Yeah, there are plenty
not a
of characters
Waller
he could have had. He could have had to.
But if you look at it as sort of an Elseworlds thing,
yeah,
which,
I don't really. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's just awesome to look at.
It is really pretty.
He draws planes real good. Like his airports were wonderful. You know, it was pretty good. I feel like it. You know, new writer. He got two issues. Like this was your story. And,
or like three. I think three would have been.
Yeah, good. And he made it was a little bigger than I think he had time for.
Mm-hmm.
But that's of all things, a new comic writer, that's not so bad.
No, it was really strong. He didn't overwrite it.
Yeah, I would like to see more from him, you know.
Yes.
These two could take over Detective. I'd be fine.
Please.
That'd be pretty good. Or if they did like one-shots or something, that would be
Or they got a couple of issues every year. That's totally cool.
Yeah.
Guys, I have a real problem. I really fucking love the bearded Superman.
Me too.
They know
I never want him to go away.
They did their research.
Stay with me, Beard Superman.
They did their research into what the kids like today.
While I'm lonely and scared.
They went, you know, I'm seeing a lot of men with beards around. This seems to be our audience.
And there's so many different, like, they captured it at every different angle. It gets hero shots throughout.
He totally puts conditioner in that. It's just shiny and new.
And his hair's a little bit longer, too. In addition,
this was
which was a problem with no beard, but without with the beard, with the it beard. All works together. That's the secret ingredient right there.
So this is the first issue of a new arc of action. Finally, we're getting past that doomed storyline.
You know how hard it is to get beard conditioner that works on a Kryptonian? I mean, that shit has to penetrate.
This is also drawn by Aaron Cooter, and I feel like this book is always much better when he's drawing it.
Yes.
And so this issue. We're dealing with the aftermath of the Doom storyline. People are rebuilding. And Smallville's having problems. This is also a horror story. So I'm curious, Josh, what you thought of it. Because
I like all of the things about it except for the horror story.
Mm.
It's very much a horror to small town, which I do. I like those kind of things. Like, very sort
it's
of
the mist. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's
the mist.
It's kind
of the
mist. And it's fine. I enjoyed. I liked the Lana John Henry stuff. That was interesting. I like. Whatever this weird detachment Superman we're going through right now, which, by the way, is such a better version of the thing that I think Straczynski was trying to get across when he did the grounded thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very similar, but this is just executed so much better. And then he's finally, you know, he's like, I have to get involved. So, like, he's still Superman. You know, he's got to do that thing. And it's personal because it's in Smallville. I don't know why no one's putting that together, by the way. Why is he always here?
And he has a beard, and Clark has a beard.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
Beards
are in, man.
Yeah, so I don't really care about the zombie part, but I thought the rest of it was well done.
I think the important thing to note about the beard is that, and the longer hair, it's not a Jesus thing, which it usually is with Superman.
Right.
But they're going a different route. They're not going for that, you know,
dude's
Sunday
keep
school
up
route.
The times. He's moving to Williamsburg. He's opening a brewery in his back room. Looks awesome.
Yeah,
I like the device that he couldn't penetrate the fog, so he went off to save the day and came right back after he saved Lana.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I'll be back soon, and you weren't kidding.
Lana as a character. I think that they've actually managed to create, by not making her a romantic character and by, you know, sort of bringing her into this world and reinvented, they have a really nice
relationship.
I mean, basically, she's the one who knew him before he was famous.
Right.
And she's super capable on her own, you know, and she's with Steel now, but it's not like she's the trophy for that guy. It's because he's equal to her.
I also like this Steel in that the old Steel suit never made sense because it was like a suit and a mask he wore, yet somehow he continued to talk in his mouth. It's like a Destro problem.
Right.
But this is like a liquid metal that envelops his body, which makes more sense. I like that.
Unfortunately, they're going to be sued by Ultimate Iron Man, so.
Now, I also like that the three barbershop old dudes sitting are like the villains. You know, like the three guys that sit there and watch the town go by every day in front of the barbershop are the main culprits here. I like that.
It's I don't think I picked town. Up on that.
Yeah. That's the last page. The last two pages. I just like a little horror story in a small town.
See, I misread that. See, because they say, what's he going to do about us? I thought they just weren't affected by it. No, it was like, how's he going to save us? But that makes much more sense.
Yeah. And so I'm not a big horror fan, but I do like these kind of creepy small town horror stories because small towns are pretty
good.
Creepy.
That it's, I'm trying to think of the right analogy for it, but it's like the Stepford Wives thing, but, you know, like the normalcy, the banality of a town in Stepford, right. It's like suburbia, but here it's, you know, for like a small town.
It's nice. I don't mind going off genre sometimes for Superman, like a Superman thing. Like that's interesting. I think it's a cool thing to do. And, you know, I don't want the book to be that all the time, but
there was a really good Superman horror story in the 90s that Arthur Adams drew. I think they just recently collected it because it was like a three-parter and they made it into a little trade. It co-starred Batman and it was about them fighting vampires in a small like bayou town. And it was actually really, really good and looked beautiful, obviously, because Arthur Adams drew all three issues. But
cool.
I like occasional Superman horror story because it's a monsters and zombies and magic is not his wheelhouse. So,
right,
it's not so easy for him to punch things. And
it's also weird coming right after Halloween. You want it to be the week of Halloween. It's a sort of a scheduling kind of, you know.
Well, Halloween is all year, Paul. If it's in your heart,
if you're Elvira, yeah.
Well, speaking of being in your heart, the holidays are coming up, and if you're going to do your holiday shopping, in fact, if you want to check out that aforementioned Superman trade, which maybe I'll look up while the show's going on during a book I didn't read, you can go to fanboy.com/Amazon.
Wait a minute.
Find your portal to Amazon, do all your holiday shopping. We get a piece of that, keeps the servers on, keeps the microphones in working order, keeps us all happy, keeps Josh and cocaine. It's a worthy endeavor.
Because I sound like a cokehead.
To do all your holiday shopping.
You should see me without it.
Doing it at fanboy.com/Amazon. And we really appreciate it. During the years, whenever we've been doing this, people always seem to do that. There's always a spike in the Amazon stuff in the holidays. So we really appreciate that and thank everyone who does that. It's not just me.
We do.
Partially me. It's partially me, but not just me.
Also, you're doing it for the economy at larger. And then also, if you want to prove to your loved ones that you love them,
exactly,
buy them shit. I mean,
that's how it works, right?
You should give them that new Amazon Echo thing. You have to put in a request
really
to get invited.
Isn't it?
You just call it Jarvis.
Their little Kindle TV thing that you just plug into the HDMI port, that's pretty badass.
The Echo is interesting, though. It's almost like a Star Trek computer. And also, ifanboy.com/registration. That's where you become an iFanboy member. $3 a month to $30 a year. That's how you do it. It helps us directly. And we appreciate everyone who's done that over the years. Everyone who's helped us out through either of those methods. In this holiday time, in the spirit of forgiveness, we thank all of you.
Do you know what the last thing in the description of the Echo is? They got 4 bullet points here. Let me tell you if this scares you.
Uh-oh.
Point
always
4.
Always listening?
Connected to the cloud, so it's always getting smarter. Right there, you need to stop.
Yep.
What are you doing, Josh?
That's awful. You know what?
What are you doing?
I'm afraid I can't let you do that, Connor.
It even has to have a safe word. Like you have to use the word to do it. Like they know how dangerous it is.
If it keeps getting smarter, it's going to be able to override that. You know what? I'm sorry. I can't recommend anybody buy that. We probably shouldn't support.
Shut it down.
You get that the dongle thing that Josh was talking about. I ordered one of those.
I don't know.
I remember it was $20.
Yeah. Now in general, I'm a little worried about the company. Cyberdyne System. What?
Amazon, a subsidiary of Cyberdyne System.
My thing is to befriend
it. Which one's Cyberdyne?
That's Terminator.
That's okay, right. That's what I was going for.
Mm-hmm. You get it.
Skynet.
You did it. Even if you didn't know you were doing it. You did it,
I wasn't sure if I did. I was like, is this Blade Runner? I can't remember right now.
Well, either way, that'd been fine. But
I know.
You're right on point with your reference.
Thank you.
You clowns read Superman Unchained?
Yes.
This is the final issue.
Is it number 9?
Yeah.
Okay.
I really wonder what this book would have been if it had a different artist.
I wonder that every time an issue comes out. But
Superman Dark Knight Over Metropolis. I'm sorry. I've just been looking it up while you guys have been talking.
Okay.
That's the name of the collection. It came out last year. Features actually multiple stories. One of which is the Arthur Adams Batman and Superman Fight Vampire story. Actually, it wasn't 3 parts. It was just an oversized annual. I'm sorry. Continue.
Well, the Dust and Gwyn parts were really nice.
They were nice.
Although I don't think you would invite for the whole book either.
I enjoyed the rest of it too, but I think I would prefer another artist, and I don't think it's worth having it come out so sporadically to have Jim Lee on it, because I don't think it's even Jim Lee at top form.
Yeah, it didn't seem to affect the sales. It wasn't like it was a blockbuster. It's funny because when we first heard about this book, we were at Comic-Con and we were in the pool trying to figure out who should draw it, because they hadn't had an artist yet at that point. And we really couldn't figure out anybody but Darwin Cook.
Although I don't think he would have been right for this story.
No.
So
but that would have been, I don't know.
What's interesting about it is,
like 10 years ago, you would have been like, oh, Brian Hitch or what's his name? It's McNiven, or somebody like that, or Cassaday, maybe.
Right.
But today, those aren't necessarily surefire sellers. I don't know.
What's interesting about it, and this sort of bleeds through also in the Geoff Johns Superman book, is that these guys seem to be very consciously or subconsciously fighting against the new 52 version of Superman. Because in this one, it's like it's implied he has this long legacy of inspiring the people of Earth, and the Lois relationship doesn't really make much sense. And this isn't a knock on the writing. This is them trying to write a traditional Superman story within the framework of the new Superman. And it doesn't really
work. Well, in the same way that we were just talking about Detective, like this,
right.
This exists sort of as an Elseworlds, yeah. But why should it have to, I suppose?
Well, yeah, there's that bit with Lois before he goes up and he thinks he's going to sacrifice himself. He goes up with the full intention of that, and she's like about to say I love you, but says thank you instead. And so yeah, it does feel like bumping up against that, and just
because they haven't had that relationship in this world. They haven't. It wouldn't make any sense. I mean, I get it's just weird. I just wish they would stick with a direction.
What's also interesting about it is, you know, Scott Snyder is a big fan of Dark Knight Returns, and you get that bit where Superman is like, you know, turned into like a withered corpse, basically, in outer space. And it feels very, you know, Frank Miller.
Totally.
In fact, even the art at that point.
Yes.
Like, takes a turn. It's really interesting. Those specific parts, they don't feel very Jim Lee. Look at how liney the work gets. It's like a whole different thing. Liney. That's a technical term. It's an interesting term. You probably haven't heard it.
It's only for insiders.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have even said it. Overall, I'll bleep it out. Overall, I think we all really enjoyed, for the most part. We've been enjoying this. I would like to read this all at once to sort of...
Yeah.
Because reading it every few months or so has been tough.
Because Snyder touches on some interesting things. Like the whole bit with Luthor at the end. You know, talking about he's a candle. He's not, you know, like a beacon. It's a very nuanced sort of criticism of Superman.
Yes, it is.
I like that actually, because he said he analyzed Superman's energy trail or whatever and science stuff. And you know, he doesn't always go do the right thing. It's a lot of trial and error. Mm-hmm. And I liked that too, because that is what he is.
He's trying to say that he's an alien, but he's finding out he's human.
Right.
Pat on the back, guys. Liney and science stuff.
Science stuff and Liney. Yeah, the end. Legendary Liney science stuff.
Well, that would be too much. Legendary Star-Lord number 5.
This is fun. And this, you really do feel you sense the voice of Chris Pratt in here. He's like fully taken over the character now in the comics, and it wasn't always that way. And even wasn't
the movie yet.
That way, you know, a year ago. So he says things
like, he wasn't just in your house.
So I do have a talking Star Lord that can do phrases. Anyways, he says stuff like donkey sandwich, which I just hear Chris Pratt in my head when he's saying that. So I like what Sam Humphries is doing here. It's a beautiful book, Paco Medina on art. And my favorite thing about this continues to be a long distance relationship with Kitty Pride. That's a fun combination of characters. And they have hollow dates. It makes sense in that they're never really romantic. It's always her being let down by how bad a long distance boyfriend he is, because he misses their dates, where it's basically their Skype chats.
It's really hard to keep track of that time change.
It's hard enough going like New York, London, and LA, you know, Paris or something. But you're talking about time zones and space. I don't even know what those are.
There's not even
an app for that.
It may not even be relative to, say, the minute. You know, at least we can go by the hour. You're talking about it boggles the mind. It's science stuff.
Yeah, science stuff. It's really
Connor,
deep science stuff.
Stop giving it away. We're gonna get in trouble.
he's also in the thick of it, and he says, okay, holodate in 2 days. And she's like, okay. And it's like, what does that mean?
Like, do the holograms have a sensory capability?
Is it like the holodeck?
I don't know.
It's less holodeck. It's less Riker on the holodeck and more help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It's that kind of thing. Which is more realistic, to be honest.
Yeah.
But also not terribly fulfilling.
Or it's like the Tupac or Lil Sebastian holograms.
Nice.
I just watched all of Parks and Rec last month for the first time. So
good show.
It is. And I get a lot of jokes that I didn't get.
It was a number. It was one of those shows that that was like that first six season episode, or first six episode season was like that was not good. And yeah. then they come back and they'd sorted it out.
They did an office. They pulled an office.
You get rid of one of those guys and then you fix Steve Carell's hair. Those are the two things you do.
Chew 44. We got to be reaching closer to the end of Chew, don't we?
It certainly feels like it because they killed everyone in this one.
this was the last issue, maybe.
Yeah, no, I actually, this was like the all action issue, and I got to the end of it, and I was like, that's a real good Chew issue. You know, they did their time jumping, they moved things around. It's the fun stuff you expect from Chew. And they killed a lot of the people, or at least, at the very least, mauled them quite significantly. They've done a good job at making this vampire guy, or whoever, I forget his name, very formidable.
Dracula.
Is it Drea? It's Dracula, right?
Blade.
I don't know. It's something like that.
Nosferatu.
Dracula guy. I don't know.
It's not Dracula.
Count Dracula.
Stitched up head.
But like they're in the zone so good, or well, if you want to be grammatically correct, they're in the zone like so perfectly that they really can just do all sorts of fun stuff. And there's even a Popeye gag in this that I absolutely loved. I thought it was really funny. And then of course there's a two-page spread in the middle where Poyo versus Oyop, who's his dark dimensional doppelganger. It's just a giant two-page spread for no reason, except to say that Poyo is not there to save their bacon. So like he's this MacGuffin that they've set up, and then he's not there at the time they need him, which is funny. You know, and then eyes get ripped out and limbs are chopped off, and it's just a real good issue. Then there's some script in the end, so you can see how John writes it and Rob interprets it. And,
have they done that before?
I feel like I haven't seen it because I always like to see how they do, you know, scripts, what they look like. These scripts look exactly like the way that I write scripts, so obviously I approve.
Is the chicken doppelganger a MacGuffin or a McNugget?
Oh, that's a groaner.
Yeah, that's why I waited so long. It's like the longer I wait.
I respect it.
Highlight that. Yeah.
I don't know that I respect you, but I don't respect it.
The other thing is this going to be the new Superior Foes of Spider-Man where we assume each issue is the last issue and we're always wrong?
This is definitely not. Did that for three
like the
issues?
Last
didn't
three
we?
Issues.
I think one of the. I think the.
I think
it
ended right. I think.
Yeah, it was.
It is a good place to end.
Good work, Josh.
Listen, 461 of them. It was still a good issue. And I think there was just shit out that week.
Ghost Fleet number one.
This was neat. I didn't have a lot of books this week, so I tried some new stuff. So I saw a new number one from Dark Horse, and it's Donny Cates and Daniel Warren. And this is a book about lost roads or secret roads in the Americas.
I was under the impression that where we were going, we didn't need roads.
It dates back to the War of 1812, and
I like where you're going with this.
Andrew Jackson is negotiating with Jean Lafitte, the pirate. And what we didn't know about that negotiation is that he gave him a map, because pirates know about secret byways and highways and smuggling routes, and gives him a map. And then fast forward to now, and there's two dudes who are running like a big rig with like a crazy, like, I don't know, shovel on the front. It looks more like a train than a big rig, but they're hauling something, and it's mysterious, and it ends up blowing up, and they don't know what it is exactly, and there's betrayal, and it's hyper violent and crazy, and I really liked it. And the art looks like sort of a cross between Guy Davis and Matt Kent. There's like really sort of rough, and there's a lot of velocity to it and all forward momentum, and they're holding back a lot of information, but
they're
it
both
just
quite
makes
limey,
me,
those guys.
Yeah, it just. But it just.
That's not even a joke, actually.
But it just it makes me.
Although
all the more
Matt
intrigued.
Kent is Matt Kent's a bit more painty.
Painty and liney.
Well,
he's liney. He's liney painty.
So that's cool.
It is cool.
What was the map? What did it tell you?
The map apparently.
Who gave the map to whom?
Jean Lafitte gave Andrew Jackson, then General Andrew Jackson, the map. So it's like, so you can make an escape or whatever. Like it's, I don't know, different secret roads. And so I think we're going to find out more about that later. But then that leads to these, I don't know, secret routes for hauling weird supernatural artifacts. And it also paints the picture that it's going to be like a revenge story. So
wait, I have one question.
Yeah.
At no point are they Hall and Oates, though.
It could be.
I got you back.
What they're hauling could be a man eater.
It was. Watch out. Here she comes.
Here she comes.
So I dropped off Justice League 3000. I just wasn't super into this story. If you recall, it's the story of in the year 3000, some people do some science stuff to clone the Justice League, bring them back.
Okay.
And it was fun for a while. It was like what would the Justice League be like with the powers but no nurture? And so Superman was a big old dumb jock, and and Flash kept dying. They kept going through flashes. And so I came back for this with number 11 because in this issue, it's written by Giffen and DeMatteis, the old Justice League humor team, and it's drawn by Howard Porter, the other Justice League. So it's like very cross Justice League cultural book. But in this issue, they have brought back Booster Gold and Blue Beetle from the pre-52. That was the big cliffhanger. They were unfrozen from cryostasis at the very end. So it's the original characters from their original Justice League run. And I read an interview with Keith Giffen last week, and he was like, fuck it. We don't care.
That seems to be like everybody's hook is that they set up the new 52, and then it was like, how can we get the old characters back in here? So many people are working on that.
It's funny because they were like, well, you know, in other books, the editors often like, well, you can't do this because this is contradicted this thing. We're the only book in the year 3000. No one can contradict us. Mm-hmm. So we're doing whatever we want. And those guys have like a special place in the DC history. So I think they kind of get a lot of leeway mm-hmm. to do what they want. So if you're a fan of that old era, if you're a fan of Blue Beetle and Booster Gold, who aren't really in the new 52, they're going to be Justice League 3000. It's going to be them. And so I'm going to at least give them a few issues because the world's okay. The characters are kind of convoluted, the ones who aren't Justice League characters, but I'm interested to see what happens when these time displaced characters show up in this story. So we'll see.
Did either of you guys read any of Imperial?
No.
It's this, I'm going to go ahead and call it a little book. Because it was
tiny.
It was four issues, and the covers are super plain, so it gives it like a little like a handmade quality, I suppose. But this is from Steve Siegel.
Oh right, okay.
And Mark Dos Santos, penciler and inker. And it's like a four. I didn't know what it was really. It just kind of the cover was intriguing, and I like to look at Siegel stuff every once in a while. And it's this guy who is just a loaf. And he's picked by this superhero called Imperial because the guy's saying, well, he's crowned, says you're the next guy, but he's really bad at it. And Imperial is the superhero, and he's super regal, and he's just trying to train him through the whole thing. And it went in a direction I didn't really expect and became sort of a kind of a love story. This was the fourth issue. It was the last one, just a little mini series. No, it was not amazing, but it was fun, and it was yet another sort of just a little twist on the superhero and what it should be, and it was amusing, really, musing, not amusing as in funny.
Mm.
You know, from a guy who's a veteran, and it's interesting. He's got Big Hero 6 coming out this weekend, but this is the other thing he did.
Good for him.
Yeah. You know, still, that's what I like about the Man of Action guys is that they have no need to do comic books, but they keep doing them.
Oh, they love to do them.
Yeah, which is really, I love that.
Those are the books that came out this week that we wanted to talk about. You go to ifanboy.com and you can find the post for this show, and you can talk about other books or these books or whatever books. If you want to talk, we're going to talk about books in a few minutes that aren't even comic books. So talk about whatever. We are open.
You do that as a thing. That's fine.
Let's do an email. Glenn writes and says, I hear you guys talk about craft a lot on the podcast, and I was wondering how far craft goes for you guys. For me, things like book layout, pagination, and paper stock are all part of the craft. But I know you guys read most of your books digitally now, and it seems like all these things are lost in the digital realm. A lot of the big publishers seem like they are a little formulaic when it comes to these sorts of things, but the smaller publishers seem to put a lot of stock into this. Example, Image, Boom, Dark Horse, etc. A great example is Hickman. All his creator-owned books are immaculately constructed, but his Marvel books are fairly run-of-the-mill. Are these aspects of the craft not important to you, or is digital just so convenient that you don't mind losing them?
There's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
Just as it stands, I'll tell you how I go about. I read most of the stuff digitally. I actually read most of the image stuff in the physical form, and I think that you're right, but I don't know that like Dark Horse is necessarily, their books are all seem to be pretty much the same. Image definitely makes a difference in the way that they produce books in terms of materials and stuff like that, because it's up to the creator. So with mm-hmm. a guy like Hickman, who's, you know, he's a designer also, he's an artist, you know, he has a very clear idea about what he wants, and that what he wants is circles. But after that, but after that, like, clearly, like, his books are a notch above in the way that the paper and the printing goes, and how those all come out. And we do all like that and respect it. Mm-hmm. But I also think that generally we are going through so much material at a given clip that I don't know that we pay that much attention to it.
The only one I can think of off the top of my head is Afterlife with Archie, which is on a different paper stock, sort of a thicker, mm-hmm. rougher stock, which I
that,
like.
It used to be among like Marvel and DC, the more prestige the book was, the more fancy and heavy the paper was.
Right.
Like that's how you knew. And if you got like a prestige square bound book, holy crap, that's going to be $6. And this is a big deal.
The door.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't.
And I don't feel like they do that anymore, because all of the paper sort of got up to a notch, and it more indicates how much money they want to spend on the book versus how important the books are. Like, if you look, Vertigo books got real crappy for a while. Like, Vertigo trades are like still on newsprint, or at least they were up until recently. Because you go through the Preacher trades. This was, I don't know if there's a different printing of them, but like the first ones are on really nice, heavy, glossy paper. And then volume 9 was basically newsprint. I was like, all right, well, I guess I see how this is going for them. but, you know, I think when we talk about craft, I think our definition of it would be the construction of the story and page.
Right, but he's talking about, he acknowledged that, but he wants to talk about the other craft, which is the physical craft.
Yeah, I don't think normally we're discussing that when we say it, but there's certainly something to it, and I think you get more of that like in books. Like Archaea books are a great example.
We tend to look for it more in collections.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I was going to say, we don't talk about it that much, because the week-to-week stuff that we're talking about on the show doesn't usually venture into that territory. It's very rare. Like, sometimes it'll be like a crazy thing from Image. You know, like a McKeever book, or like, or yeah, or the fade out the first.
Did you guys
one
get that? There's a huge giant one.
Yes,
I've gotten it twice.
Yeah, I've gotten it twice too. It's just ginormous. Like, it's like a placemat or like a.
It's a little intimidating.
I brought it to work,
and yeah,
it's on a table, it's on a side table.
The scale, and you know, and you know, like it's been so long, but Wednesday Comics, when it was on newsprint, that was a really big part of the experience, and I enjoyed that. But I mean, week to week, Marvel, DC, you know, Image, IDW, like it's not really something that they do in monthly single issue comics.
Also not, I don't, it's probably not financially viable.
Well, practically, if you are selling a book through, if you're doing a book through Image, you're paying for it, not necessarily up front, but so all the costs are going to come out of your profits.
Right.
So you can do a bunch of stuff, and if it's not important to you to make that extra money, then you can make whatever you want out of it. But that's a consideration, and it's the same consideration for the larger publishers too.
I like to look for a good. You know what? I want a company, whether it's Image or IDW or Boom or whoever, to have the balls, and I'm putting it out there, to print a monthly comic with a fucking ribbon, a placeholder ribbon,
just the monthly.
Just in a monthly 22-page comic. I don't want a placeholder.
I love placeholder ribbons.
Because you find yourself stopping and starting a lot in the 22-page comic?
You never know. I'm just saying I want to find a company that has the balls to do it. I love a placeholder ribbon in its collection.
So what Connor's saying right now is that he likes the idea of a $4.99 price tag.
A ribbon would have been helpful in Tooth and Claw number one. Because I did not read that in one sitting.
I enjoyed it, but I did not enjoy it. I was on a plane after having not slept a lot, and I may have fallen asleep in the middle of it. But the book was still there when I got up, so it wasn't a problem. I will say one other thing is that you don't see a lot of investment in this, I think, because the audience isn't terribly invested in it. Yeah. You know, there was a time when a book that had a 3D tinfoil cover that was worth money. So they put money into it.
Last year.
Well, yeah. Well, they keep trying to get it back. What if we do this again? Dude, we tried. Remember?
Oh,
it doesn't.
Here's a question. Did you guys talk about the Harley Quinn book last week?
The which one?
The Harley Quinn scratch and sniff book?
No.
Okay. Cause I didn't listen because I couldn't be bothered. But that book.
Who's writing that pun joke?
Is so weird. It's
well,
not,
we don't. We
it's
don't
not technically. Yeah, I got it in the mail. I'm on that list. I got. It's not. It's rub and smell, not scratch and sniff. Right. But you could smell like the leather of her leather jacket.
Like pot.
Yeah. There's some stuff that's like toxic waste that I think. Or just general science stuff that ends up smelling that way. And there's pizza and pizza breath. And after a couple scratches and sniffs, everything did kind of smell like one weird miasma of, a dorm room.
I tried to rub the iPad and all I got was fucking heat blisters.
Well, you would have also gotten all those coal marks too.
Right. Well, I think I was rubbing the exhaust pipe.
Yeah. Yeah, what you want to do is you want to get over to the diesel intake.
Listen, you know what happened this week? $200 for a new battery for my iPad because the old battery wouldn't turn over anymore when I tried to turn it on in the morning. So I take it to the shop, get a new battery.
Well, at least it was the carburetor because you don't have a fuel injector and that's still carburetor.
No,
right?
If it was a carburetor. Then you're talking. You know, it wasn't even the alternator. Alternator would have been a big problem.
Yeah,
but chugging along just fine. So, Glenn, that's actually a really interesting question.
I'm just amazed that thing's still legal in California.
I haven't gotten the smog checked, to be honest with you. So, thank you, Glenn, for writing in. Let's quickly do a voicemail, because we never fucking do voicemails anymore. Why do I sound like I'm drunk?
Why are you swearing?
I don't know. I think it's because it's lunchtime. Okay. And I haven't eaten.
I don't know.
Wait a minute. Are you operating that iPad in a closed room?
Let's do a voicemail.
Hi, this is Josh from Seattle, Jay Nell on the site. I'm calling, this is a little off the subject of comics, but I was listening to some old shows, and you guys got me thinking about Lincoln. So if you could indulge me, if Paul has anything to add too, what would you say between Josh and Connor would be the favorite book about the Lincoln assassination? I don't know, I know it's come up twice in like these old shows I've been listening to, so I'm kind of like, I want to check out the best one of those. So, yeah, if you guys can let me know which one was your favorite, that'd be great. Thanks. Bye.
Well, we both recognize that this doesn't have a heck of a lot to do with comic books, but we don't care.
It's our show.
Yeah, it's our show. And also, anytime somebody can tell me you made me think a lot about Lincoln, that's a public good.
You can get rewarded by being on the show.
Okay, so right away. I think that your first bet, the thing you're going to want to go to is Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killer by James Swanson. It's a relatively new book in the last decade or so. You want more after that, you can check out American Brutus, John Wilkes Booth and the Lincoln Conspiracies by Michael Kaufman, which really goes into depth on Booth and the conspiracy and all that stuff. You could and only after you've read all that should you then watch the Redford movie. It's not conspiracy. It's Is it conspiracy?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a third one. Those two are excellent. That's the order I read them. I read Manhunt first, and then I read American Brutus. The third one is They Have Killed Papa Dead.
Oh.
By Anthony Pitch, which I read. I think flying to a convention, or maybe on a train. I definitely read it on a conveyance. But anyway, that one's really really good too, and it has a lot more. I think it's newer. Then those are the first two, and yes. I think it has some more information, more uncovered stuff in it. Like that was the first book that mentioned that they had to sneak Lincoln into town on a train because there was so many threats against him.
That was in Doris Kearns Goodwin's book.
This was in They Have Killed Papa Dead. This is the first time I had read it because I haven't read Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Right, I know, but that fact was in that is what I'm saying. As part of
I know,
story.
But I'm
books
saying
are about
if you
the read
Manhunt, American Brutus, then you read They Have Killed Papa Dead, you'll find new facts.
I understand.
Those three books.
I was going to say though, if you're really into it, then you definitely need to go back and read Goodwin's A Team of Rivals, because it sets the stage for all of that. And then you get in deep after that. You can start reading Shelby Foote's History of the Civil War.
And then I would recommend renting The Lincoln Lawyer. Matthew McConaughey is a lawyer, works out of his car.
And what does he have to do with Lincoln?
He works in a Lincoln.
His I'm gonna go car ahead not is recommend...
named after
it's actually not a bad movie.
That dude.
I'm going to go ahead and not recommend Killing Lincoln by Bill O'Reilly because I'm biased.
So those are the three. I would say the three that I would say are Manhunt. Manhunt's written more like a thriller almost.
He also
but it's
did
a good introduction to the whole scenario.
He also did like Swanson did like all ages versions of those stories too.
Interesting.
Which is really interesting.
Would either of you recommend Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory?
No.
No.
Okay.
So Manhunt.
It's not even American spelled Brutus, correctly.
And They Killed Papa Dead. Those are the top three Lincoln assassination books. I would check those out. Sure. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 88-FANBOY 326-2697. And thanks to Josh and to Glenn for doing that.
It's true.
Would either of you recommend putting up a profile on LinkedIn?
No.
Definitely not.
Definitely not.
Completely useless.
It goes for all three of us.
And if you want to have a lot of email in your box constantly telling you about LinkedIn, you can do that.
Apparently, if I click now, I can get a free 30-day trial.
Jesus Christ. really quickly, we did a Birdman podcast, me and Ron and Mike Romo. We did a podcast on Birdman or the Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. So if you were one of the dozens of people that have seen that movie,
maybe
listen to the podcast. It was lots of fun. And we mentioned this last week. Don't listen to the podcast unless you have seen the movie, because the less you know about the movie, the better going into it.
I had one chance to see that while I was in San Francisco, and I missed it. And I was like, well, I guess we're gonna go. We'll have to wait for
next time.
It ain't playing up here.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Let me look.
That was a lot of fun. It's always fun talking to Mike and Ron about movies, and this was a particularly interesting one to talk about. So that was that, and. I don't think we have any other special editions planned until we get to the year-end all-media podcast, Paul, which we have to start preparing for.
Ooh, yeah.
So you can look forward to that in the middle of December, about a month from now, actually. A little over a month from now.
This is the part of the year where I try to remember where I figure out if, you know, things I rented that I enjoyed came out this year, or, like, should they count if they came out in January? Like, I don't know. I don't remember. I remember seeing a lot of great movies this year, so that'll be fun.
So we'll start the prep for that, and we'll have that show for you in a month or so. And until then, I think we're probably done on special edition shows unless something comes along that we catch our fancy. So check that out. That's over at ifanboy.com, as well as the post for this show. You can comment on this show, the Birdman show, any podcast we've done talking about this week's books or movies or TV shows related to comics. All that's at ifanboy.com.
Yeah, I would definitely have to leave the state. That's what I just learned.
I was only playing at 50 screens at the time of the recording of the show, so I don't know how many it's on now.
So you could follow us at twitter.com/ifanboy. You go to facebook.com/ifanboy. And if you do that, you'll know what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, if that is a thing that is important to you.
First.
That's right. Do people do that? Is that a thing?
They still do that.
I should just do that all over Facebook. Just every time I see something that hasn't been commented on with all those people I don't know. Just first. He's been doing that for 2 weeks. I wonder how many people I can lose. Anyway, you can also follow us individually at CS Kilpatrick, Fuzzy Typewriter, or Jay. Were you invaded by aliens? Because that was definitely not a sound that your iPad makes.
Sorry. I forgot to turn my phone off.
And finally, if you dig this kind of thing, you can write us a review in iTunes. Better yet, tell your friends about this show or my other show, O Comics, with an exclamation point at the end. You don't have to put that in when you're searching in iTunes, but... I've had some fun stuff lately. If I can indulge for just a second, we did a discussion last week about dyslexia and comics, which was really enlightening and interesting. And this week I spoke to Bill Kartopoulos, who is the new series editor for the Best American Comics 2014. And there's a lot of talk, actually, kind of apropos that we talked about that email about, paper stock and stuff like that, because we talk about that. And how do you put Chris Ware's building stories into an anthology that is not the shape of building stories? And when you don't have the paper that they used for Hip Hop Family Tree. So that's a fun one. Check that out, please.
Well, all right.
It's my job.
No, I'm not. No, I just, I didn't know where I was then. Because then after that, it just says...
That's it for this week's show?
Yeah.
Thank
I didn't know who was going to do that.
Oh. See, this is the problem when there's three of us.
Yeah.
It's too many people.
Shows with three people are hard.
Listen, guys.
How did we do this for so many years?
We're going to have to let me go. I'm sorry. you've been really valuable to the team, me. But I have to let me go.
It's not nothing the personal. Quality of work you used to put in.
I think that's absolutely clear. Did you hear the puns on this show? I said Hall and Oates.
I respected that one, though.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
He said Hall and like three times, and my head was like, I couldn't help it.
I think this had been a really good show up until now.
This had been a good
I was
show.
Actually really proud of this episode, and then I don't know.
And then I did. I just pulled the plug out from it. Let the air
Josh
the
ruins
room.
Things. That's what he does. That's what I do. I'm Josh.
Ruin
things.
Hey, I heard you installed that new choke valve on the iPad. Is that working out for you? Because it was having trouble starting in colder weather.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, we had a brief cold snap in LA, which meant it got down into the 50s. And so what I did was I have everyone huddle around the iPad for warmth.
Yeah, you want to be careful because the diesel fuel can gel up.
Well, yeah.
If you're not careful.
So, oh, God, I have a back problem now. I'm lugging it around.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Sherpa didn't come through?
No. Not covered in my insurance.
Good call. All right.
Thanks.
Until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. No, I changed it around. I don't want to be last. It's too much pressure. I'm saying
you've been last for 9 years.
I know. I just wanted to see what would happen.
You can't just switch it up after 9 years.
It's muscle memory now. We are Groot.
Listen, it doesn't say fucking Jeff, does it? Why did I swear?
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.